here from Thousand Palms, California, is Dr. Lorraine Day. Doctor?
Hello.
Welcome back to the program.
Well, thank you very much.
Boy, it's great to have you back, and you sound great.
Well, I am. I'm healthy as everything.
A lot of my audience will not know you, so if you would take us back to the days at San Francisco.
All right. I'll just give you my credentials, because when I tell you the things I'm going to tell you, a lot of people will say, well, where did this woman come from? She can't really be a doctor. So I'll give you my credentials.
Please.
I am a medical doctor, an MD. I was on the faculty of the University of California, San Francisco Medical School for 15 years as associate professor and vice chairman of the Department of Orthopedic Surgery. I was also chief of orthopedic surgery at San Francisco General Hospital, where I was a trauma orthopedic surgeon taking care of all the gunshot wounds and the stabbings and the motor vehicle accidents and the gang wars and all of that for the 15 years I was there. So I have always been in the mainstream of academic medicine. I've never been on the fringes, and I am still licensed to practice medicine. And my life took a different turn when I developed cancer. And by that time, I'd seen thousands of patients die from the treatment we give them, actually, because all doctors know that chemotherapy and radiation destroy your immune system, which is the only system you have in your body that can get you well and keep you well from virtually any disease, including cancer. And both chemotherapy and radiation actually cause cancer. There are many articles in the literature about that. So I figured that I needed to rebuild my immune system rather than to destroy it with all of the medical treatments that are generally prescribed. And of course, my colleagues thought I was crazy, and they told me I was going to die, and they were wrong.
Let me take you back a little bit, if I might, and we'll sort of work forward. When you were working in emergency medicine, what was that like? I mean, all of us have probably one time or another been in an emergency room of a big hospital, and it's sort of sometimes controlled anarchy. It's the damnedest thing I've ever seen. It is sort of controlled anarchy, isn't it?
Well, actually, everybody knows what to do. I mean, we have done it for so long that everybody knows their place. Everybody knows exactly where they're to be positioned at the patient's side or head or wherever. And so before the patient hits the door, we all know our jobs. And so it may seem like it's pandemonium, but it's not. There is a lot of calling out, because there's a lot of commotion going on. People are moving very rapidly. But everybody knows their job, and it's not a scary thing at all for people who do it all the time.
So something like that, the strain of that wouldn't kill you. In other words, working under that kind of life and death hour after hour after hour, life and death situations, the stress of that doesn't go to work on you.
Well, actually, you know, I did it probably longer than any trauma surgeon maybe in the country. Most trauma surgeons only last about 5 years, and they kind of burn out.
Right.
I did it really for, including my residency, I did it for 20 years and probably was the longest standing trauma surgeon around. But it did take its toll. I didn't realize it at the time because I loved my job and it was very exciting. But I lived on about 4 hours of sleep a night for about 20 years. And I would frequently operate as long as 22 hours on one patient. I operated continuously for 72 hours at a time on different patients without any sleep and with very little food.
Yeah, see, there you are. That's, in essence, what I was asking. In other words, that kind of life after a while, doesn't
destroys it? Destroys your immune system.
That's where I was going. Doesn't it go to work on your immune system?
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. It destroys your immune system. I didn't realize it at the time. I thought I was made of iron and really did hold up for quite a long time. I didn't get cancer until I was about 55. I developed cancer when I was 55. It's amazing that I didn't develop it earlier because of the way I lived. But, yes, it's you need to sleep at night. People need to at least get their 8 hours of sleep a day, and if they don't do that, their body's going to break down.
Well, I know that you also began to have concerns about your own immune system with regard to AIDS. This was in the early days of AIDS, and I think you and I did interviews going back. How long ago? When was the first interview you and I did?
Well, it must have been in the late 80s or early 90s.
That's right. Late 80s, I think.
Yeah.
And you had a confrontation, I guess, with the hospital over policies with regard to AIDS and blood that was all around and everything, and you finally decided for your own benefit you were going to toss it in.
Well, actually, I had operated on more AIDS patients than any surgeon in the country, and I'd been doing that without any particular protection other than what we usually wear in the operating room. I'd been doing that for 9 years of the epidemic. I had been talking to the Centers for Disease Control and the government and organized medicine, saying, look, if drug addicts can get AIDS from a needle stick, well, certainly a healthcare worker could get AIDS from a needle stick.
Sure.
And they kept telling me, no, 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 it can't happen. And I said, you know, you people must be out of your mind. And, of course, they were not in the operating room, so they didn't really care what happened to the rest of us. But not only was I in the operating room every day, but I felt an obligation to, I had 12 residents and interns on my service at all times. I had 8 other doctors who were working for me, and then all the nurses in the operating room. I had an obligation for their safety. And so all the time the government kept telling me, no, 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 it can't happen. And then on October 2, 1987, the first nurse was found to be positive from a single needle stick, and it was at our hospital. And that's when I sort of decided that something needed to be done. And so I got the hospital to agree that I could test my patients with an informed signed consent. And they all agreed, and then suddenly it hit the newspapers a few days later that the headlines were uproar over San Francisco doctors' testing policy. And the very doctors who were my colleagues and my friends who had agreed, the other chiefs of the various services, had agreed that I could do this, and it was within the rules of the hospital, they came out to the newspaper and said that they hadn't agreed and that I was doing this on my own, and they were against it. And so that's the way the controversy started. And I couldn't figure out for a long time why they would do that. But after a number of years on the circuit and understanding politics, I did understand.
And you ran smack into the politics of AIDS, that great wall.
Right.
All right. Since then, a lot of water has gone under the bridge. A lot of people have died.
Yes.
Almost every week or 2 weeks, I see a new story about, well, this is, we found a way to do this or that with AIDS, and we think we've got a vaccine. And then, of course, a little while later, they say, well, oops, we don't have a vaccine. We thought we did. Sorry, we don't. And various cures. There has been some progress in keeping AIDS patients alive longer with these protease inhibitors and this soup they give them. And tonight, even tonight, I've got another one. HIV killing proteins found in tears. Seems that tears and the urine of pregnant women, even saliva, tends to kill the AIDS virus in test tubes.
That's right. Anything that works in a test tube is really useless unless you have many, many more years of studies in animals and then human beings. I mean, it is ridiculous to make for the government or organized medicine or the pharmaceutical company that is doing this research to have a lot of hoopla surrounding this. What this does is it makes a big stampede for the stock market to invest in
money.
This particular company.
Sure, a pharmaceutical company.
Yeah, but other than that, it has very little.
On the other hand, the other day, Doctor, I read a story that now 1 in 8 Africans are infected with HIV. That's 1 in 8.
Right.
So from the 80s, when you and I talked, to today, where have we come with AIDS and where are we going?
We have 33 million people around the world infected with AIDS, and we have 13 million deaths already. And there is no end in sight. And the government really has no intention of controlling AIDS, nor does the United Nations, nor anyone else.
Oh, well.
And I found that out the hard way. I have lots of documentation for that. For a long time, I thought that if they just were informed of what was happening, they would do something about it, but they do not. They're not going to.
Protease inhibitors, they do seem to be having some effect in longevity of people infected. How effective are they?
Well, see, the thing is, it doesn't matter if you are sick with AIDS and you are eventually going to die and you are on all sorts of medicines with all sorts of side effects. That's not really a life. What people need to do is to get well. Now, I'm going to drop a bombshell right here.
Sure.
All right?
I like bombshells.
I know of 300 people who have gotten well from AIDS. I didn't know about this when I was interviewed by you years ago. I didn't know there was any cure for AIDS. We are told publicly that AIDS is incurable. We are also told publicly that really cancer is incurable, that you can go into remission, but you cannot be cured.
Mm-hmm.
That is not true. You can be cured of cancer, as I have been cured of cancer, because you can reverse the factors that allowed the cancer to develop in the first place, and you can rebuild the immune system. Now, AIDS is just a form of cancer. AIDS is acquired immune deficiency syndrome. It's an acquired condition where your immune system is deficient. Well, cancer is virtually the same thing. In fact, virtually all disease is a result of the immune system not working properly.
Well,
every doctor will admit that.
Cancer is the out-of-control growth of cellular material, right? In other words, a tumor that just, for some reason, everything goes berserk. I mean, in a lot of ways, if you could control cancer, you might live forever.
Actually, it's not really that berserk. Cancer cells aren't totally out of control. We like to think that. In fact, that's what we teach in medicine. But when you really get down to it, they're not totally out of control. In fact, the body does a wonderful job of isolating those cancer cells. And that's one reason you form a tumor, is because the body is putting this all in one area. And when the cancer goes into your lymph nodes, we surgeons are prone to take out the lymph nodes.
Right.
But this is crazy, because if you had an infection in your foot and the lymph nodes in your groin were swollen,
yes,
you would never go to a surgeon and ask him to remove the lymph nodes in your groin.
Not for an infection, right.
They're doing their job. They are keeping the infection from spreading.
Right.
Well, when you get cancer in your lymph nodes, the lymph nodes are doing the same thing. They are keeping the cancer from spreading. So what we doctors do is we take out your lymph nodes, which is part of your immune system, which is part of the barrier that keeps the cancer from spreading all over the place.
Okay.
Then we give you chemotherapy and radiation, destroy your immune system, and so then the cancer can spread everywhere.
You said 300 people have been cured of AIDS. How?
By virtually the same type of plan that I got well from cancer. And again, I would not believe this for a long time until I got some of those patients' medical records in my hands and saw where the tests were done, how bad they were. And for those of you who are medical that are listening, some of these patients even had opportunistic infections such as histoplasmosis encephalitis, where they were in the intensive care unit with, this is a fungal infection of the brain, which really only occurs with AIDS and other very suppressed immune syndromes. And these patients are now well, totally well, and HIV negative.
I have never heard anything like this.
Right.
In other words, once HIV positive, always HIV positive, and eventually you're going to get AIDS, inevitably. That's what I'd always heard.
Well, that's what I had always heard, and that's what I used to think, and that's what I used to say. But now I know differently. I used to also think that if you had cancer, that there really was no cure, there was only a possibility of remission. But I know better now.
Well, even in the bad old days, surgeons were occasionally able to remove a cancerous growth and get it all. I mean, they occasionally got lucky, didn't they, and removed essentially all the cancer without having a recurrence in 5 years or more?
Well, there are people who have had their cancers removed and, you know, for any, maybe even 20 years, they have not returned. Most of those people, not all, But many of those people have had chemotherapy and radiation. Now, I know of people who have had their tumors return, you know, 8, 9, 10 years after that.
Sure.
Because you don't ever really get all the cancer cells. Because the tumor always comes back.
Yep.
The same blood that's going through the tumor goes through the rest of your body, and you can never get all the tumor cells. If you have enough immune system left after you've had the treatment to destroy those cells that come back, then you may survive. But unless you change the way you're eating and living, you will either get that cancer again, another cancer, or another disease.
All right, doctor, hold on. We're at the bottom of the hour, and we're going to delve into this because, as you know, I've got somebody in my family, my dad, and I'll sort of give you an update on that. And we'll see what Dr. Day thinks. Probably not much today, doctor.
Yes.
I want to tell you a quick story about my father. Mm-hmm. My father came up a couple of years ago with melanoma on his scalp, and they removed it, and it took quite a while to heal. He had to go into a hyperbolic chamber to get it to heal. It was tough to heal, and he got it all healed up, and everything was well for a while. Then, a couple of months ago, he felt something in his neck, and as the doctor told him, one little lousy cell somehow got through. And he ended up with a melanoma tumor in his neck. He's in his 80s, early 80s. And so he thought that that was it, that was the end. He considered what to do and considered that he might not get an operation, not proceed with any kind of treatment at all. However, he did proceed to have the melanoma tumor removed from his neck and is entering the Sloan Kettering immunization program. On top of that, in other words, to try and they have this new treatment which removes some of your own cancer cells and in some way treats them, I'm not really on top of it, and then injects them back into your tumor, I guess, and the tumor goes to work on itself. That's what he's doing, and when I said I didn't think you'd think much of it, I imagine I'm telling the truth. What do you know about this?
Well, yes, I do know about that, and in fact, the type of that treatment has been around for quite some time. It's interesting that most of these things, like you were talking about this treatment that was just on the news about decreasing the blood supply to tumors,
yeah,
all of these came out of alternative medicine. That one came out of shark cartilage. The one that you're talking about now that they're going to be trying on your father is very similar to an alternative vaccine that was started by Dr. Virginia Livingston Wheeler, who was practically run out of town by organized medicine, even though she was an MD. And so these things have been around for some time. Let's just think about the cause of cancer. All you have to do is look in your newspaper and look in magazines, and I've got a number of articles right here in front of me from the Washington Post. More evidence, fruit and veggies fight cancer. Wall Street Journal, animal fat in the diet seems to promote the growth of tumors, according to Harvard researchers published in the Journal of National Cancer Institute. A link between diet and birth defects grows stronger, according to the New England Journal of Medicine. Study points to another tentative link between red meat and prostate cancer, again, Wall Street Journal. All of these things show that it is our diet and lifestyle that causes the cancer. And in fact, the Harvard School of Public Health has said 65% of all cancer could be prevented by a change in diet and lifestyle. So if 65, I say it's 99%, but if they admit that 65% of cancer could be prevented by a change in diet and lifestyle, then we have to admit that the cause of at least 65% of cancer is the wrong diet and lifestyle. So then what we've got to do, rather than give medicines or vaccines or things like that, is we've got to change the factors that cause the problem in the first place. For example, when an American gets a headache or when anybody gets a headache, they usually take an aspirin. But headaches are not caused by a deficiency of aspirin, right?
Well, that's right.
All right. So headaches are caused by too much tension, too much stress, not drinking enough water, eating the wrong foods, maybe caffeine withdrawal, many different causes, but they're certainly not caused by a deficiency of aspirin. Cancer is not caused by a deficiency of chemotherapy, nor is it caused by a deficiency of radiation.
Right.
And in fact, I had breast cancer. I didn't have cancer of the breast because I had too many breasts. Cutting them off does not solve the problem, you see? So what we've got to do is reverse the factors that allowed the cancer to develop in the first place.
So that even after the cancer has developed, and of course we have a picture of your cancer on our website,
right,
which is just beyond all belief. I mean, I've never in my life seen a tumor of that size and magnitude on anybody ever. I'm sure as a doctor you probably have, but my God almighty, that thing was... how big was it?
It was the size of grapefruit. Actually, most doctors have not seen a tumor that size either. When I show those pictures to my doctor colleague friends, they gasp as well, because most people have them either burned off with radiation or poisoned out with chemotherapy before they get that size, and then the patient usually dies from the result of the chemotherapy and radiation.
So when your tumor was growing, you obviously looked at those options and said no.
Right. I did say no because I knew that they would destroy my immune system, and that was my only hope for getting well. And so
You must have had some moments, doctor, when even you, as it grew to that size, when even you were wondering whether you'd made the right choice.
Well, I was so close to death that at one time I was not expected to live through the night, but I still refused to have conventional therapy because I knew that if I was that close to death, conventional therapy would finish me off in about a day. So I chose to hang in there and stay with the natural medicine, and of course, I am totally well, and even though I had a portion of that large tumor, what we call debulked, I had some of it removed because it was getting ready to burst onto my chest. I still had cancer all through my chest wall, in the nodes under my arm and above my clavicle, and slowly over a period of 8 months, the cancer all reversed itself, and in an additional 10 months, I was totally well. So it took me 18 months from the time I was so terribly sick and not expected to live until I was totally well.
Well, would most doctors practice what they preach? In other words, if they ended up with cancer of the sort that you had, do you think that most mainstream physicians, knowing what they know, would refuse the traditional treatments as well? That's a kind of a touchy question, I know.
No, I would say that most of them would go with traditional therapy because they don't know anything else, and I didn't know anything else for a long time. In fact, I will have to say publicly, and I try to do this frequently, is thank the good listeners out there in radio land who actually started sending me information that put me on my search to find out that this was the way to get well. I found this out before I ever developed cancer because they clued me in, and if I had never found out all the skullduggery that was going on in the AIDS epidemic, I could never have believed that there was such a big cover-up in cancer cures.
Read me the list. If you've got cancer and you want to get rid of it, you mentioned vegetables, but there's got to be a lot more to it than that. What change in lifestyle, change in diet from what to what?
Well, just let me give you an idea of the average American now eats in his lifetime 15 cows, 24 hogs, 12 sheep, 900 chickens, and 1,000 pounds of assorted other animals that walk, swim, and fly. All right?
Right.
That's a lot of animal flesh going through a human body.
Yes, it is.
In 1900, the average American ate about 300 pounds of grains a year and 200 pounds of potatoes. By 1985, the consumption of grains fell by 50%. The consumption of potatoes fell by 50%, our intake of milk increased by 50%, and our consumption of chicken went up 300% and beef 50%. During that same period of time, so we have exchanged a plant-based diet for a flesh food-based diet. In that same period of time, the incidence of cancer and heart disease and all other degenerative diseases has skyrocketed.
I know.
Right?
I know.
So what you've got to do is reverse that. I started on a totally vegan diet, meaning no animal products whatsoever. Right? Fruits, grains, vegetables, and I started drinking. I ate three meals a day. I started drinking a lot of fresh carrot juice and fresh green leafy vegetable juice because it's filled with lots of natural antioxidants, which you need to clean up the cancer cells in your body and reverse the problems as well as clean out the toxins. I also started drinking a lot of water. The body is 75% water. The brain is 85% water. One thing we do is dehydrate our bodies. I was a big coffee drinker. Coffee is a diuretic. It takes more water out of your body than comes in with the drink. So I started drinking a lot of water, a lot of fresh vegetable juice. In fact, I drank the juice of 13 fresh vegetable juices a day. And I'll tell you, I drank the juice of the following every week. I drank the juice of 35 pounds of carrots, 84 apples, 21 heads of romaine lettuce, 5 heads of red cabbage, 5 bunches of red chard, 7 green peppers, and 5 bunches of endive.
Oh, my God.
But what you see is cancer is a deficiency disease. We are all suffering from malnutrition because we're eating a lot of calories, but we're not eating enough vitamins, minerals, and enzymes. Our body can only make cells out of the raw materials we put in our mouth.
Right.
If we put bad things in our mouth, we'll make bad cells that get sick. If we put good things in our mouth, we will build good cells. So I started nourishing my body and putting a lot of water and a lot of nutrition into my body. And when you do it in juice form, now I ate 3 meals a day, but I drank juices in between. When you do it in juice form, your body doesn't have to spend a lot of energy digesting that. It goes right into
right.
your stomach and into your
right.
bloodstream.
Right. Wait. You said you ate 3 meals a day along with this.
Right.
What kind of meals?
Like for breakfast, I would have oatmeal and some fruit. For lunch, I would have, say, a baked potato with flaxseed oil, which has good omega-3 and 6 oils in it, omega-3 and 6 oils in it. And I would have lemon juice on it. It tastes just like butter. And then I would have maybe some steamed vegetables, broccoli and cauliflower. And then I'd have a nice big salad with a lot of raw vegetables and sprouts, bean sprouts, and that I would sprout in my own kitchen, alfalfa sprouts, and even you can sprout your grains. And then for dinner in the evening, I might have fruit again or a light dinner with another fresh salad or something like that. And so you eat very well, really. You can have yams or organic brown rice and things like that. So it's not like you're on a starvation diet. You have plenty of food. But then I would get out in the sunlight every day because sunlight reduces the size of internal cancerous tumors.
It does?
Yes, it does. It is well documented in medical literature. Most doctors are not taught this. I wasn't. I had to find it on my own.
Now, wait a minute. My dad blames his melanoma on all the early days of time he spent in the sun.
Just think about this. For thousands of years, human beings have been living outside. They've been working outside. And skin cancer is a disease, and melanoma is really a disease that's been occurring in the last 50 to 60 years. Was virtually unheard of before that time. They did a study at Baylor University where they took two groups of experimental animals. They gave one group the standard American diet. The other group was given a highly nutritious diet. Then they exposed both of them to the ultraviolet rays of the sun. In the group on the standard American diet, 25% got skin cancer. In the group that was fed a highly nutritious diet, not one animal got skin cancer.
Really?
So it is the diet that we're eating that is eliminating our barriers to the damaging rays of the sun, so we then are not allowed to get the healing rays of the sun.
Well, I too believe that the sun certainly helps in some, definitely in some ways. I mean, even with regard to fungal growth, incidental fungal growth, that kind of thing. You know, you've got it. You can literally turn into sort of a fungus if you don't get in the sun. I know because that's me. So,
well, you can't grow a garden without sunlight.
That's absolutely.
You can't have a healthy person without sunlight.
Hmm.
So sunlight does all sorts of things. It boosts your immune system. It lowers your blood pressure. It actually calms your nervous system because it decreases a chemical called cyclic AMP in your cells, which is increased with stress and coffee drinking and things like that. That's why you fall asleep in the sun. Sun does all sorts of wonderful things for you. Now, I'm not saying go out there and get burned, but you do need sunlight. They also did an experiment where they took two groups of experimental animals that already had cancerous tumors, and they had one group breathe indoor air and another group breathe outdoor air. The group breathing indoor air, their tumors grew twice as fast as the group breathing outdoor air. So we need outside air. I started getting out in the sun and the fresh air every day. Even when I was too sick to walk, my husband had to practically carry me out there and put me in the sun, again, not at the hottest time of day, and I would get fresh air. And when I was strong enough to walk, I started walking so I could get exercise, because cancer cannot thrive in a high oxygen environment. And the way you get oxygen around to your body is to get your blood circulating and get it well oxygenated, with particularly with outside air. So proper nutrition, lots of water, fresh vegetable juice, sunlight, fresh air, sleep. Sleep at the proper time of night. The healing hormones are produced in the body between 10 p.m. and 2 o'clock in the morning. And so people who have cancer or other serious diseases need to be in bed early. And the only time the body can really heal itself is when you're sleeping. And cancer patients need a lot of rest, a lot of sleep. So I started getting plenty of sleep. I got the stress out of my life. And in fact, this is a very important thing. I could not get well, even though I was doing all the other things, until I learned to get the stress out of my life. Now, I started out with meditation and visualization, but I had some pretty horrible experiences. And then I learned also that when you are practicing meditation, your brain is in alpha waves, and those are the hypnotic escapism waves where you're not really solving the problem. And I turned to Bible study and prayer, even though I'd been an agnostic for 30 years of my adult life, because you are in beta waves, which are the alert waves, which are the problem-solving waves. And I gave my stress and all of my problems, which everybody has, to God, and I was able to have some peace and calmness, and then I started to get well.
All right, Doctor, hold on. We'll get right back to you after the top of the hour. My guest is Dr. Lorraine Day, and if you doubt what she's saying, go to the website, go down to her name, and look at the photographs, and gasp. I'm Art Bell. We'll be right back. Well, all right, Dr. Day is my guest. Let me briefly review what she's had to say, in the sense that when I consider my life, I work during the precious hours of nurturing sleep that I should be getting, as in right now, which is today I think between 10 and 2. I'm on from 10 to 3 in the morning, so that about takes care of those hours. I have been a hamburger fiend all my life, love fries, hate vegetables, especially some vegetables. Lima beans, for example, I used to take those like pills, you know, to get to my dessert. My mom would make me take them, so I would eat. I'd eat a lima bean. Well, I didn't eat it, really. That implies one chews it. I would take my lima beans like pills and wash them down with milk so I didn't have to taste them like pills. And then most other veggies. I'm not a big fan of veggies at all. I eat salads, some salads, but most vegetable, I like corn. Most other vegetables, ick. I depend on coffee. And, of course, I smoke. And then I sleep during the daylight hours, so I don't get a lot of sun because I work all night. So I should be totally doomed, Doctor.
Well, you are living kind of the life that I lived, and I was going along just fine until suddenly one day I had a tumor. I also should tell you that the first symptom of a heart attack in 50% of those who have them is sudden death.
First symptom of a heart attack is sudden death.
Right. So we can be going along just fine.
And then boom.
And then boom. And with cancer, at least you have a chance to change the things that you've been doing.
Well, that's true.
And with 50% of heart attacks, you don't. And so I just feel very fortunate that I developed cancer because I relied on coffee. I was up all night as well. You know, I was operating all night. I was working all day.
What about somebody like myself? Now, you said 10 and 2 at night.
Right.
Does it have to be night?
Well, it's a lot better if it's night because, again, we are made to be up during the daytime, during the daylight hours, and to be sleeping at night. But certainly, if you get 8 hours of sleep, it's better any time of day than not. I wasn't even getting that.
No, I don't get that. I sleep in two shifts. I sleep a little in the morning and a little in the afternoon. That's it.
Well, you're waiting for something to happen.
Yeah, I suppose so.
And again, you see, that I thought that I was just going along just fine. People used to say, you're working too hard. You can never hold up working like this. And I said, what is it? You know, you're just wimping out here. I can handle this just fine.
But you didn't.
No. See, health is a result of healthful living. And disease is a result of unhealthy living. It's just that simple. And so you can start changing over gradually. You don't have to change over all at once as I did. I had to change over all at once in order to survive. But you don't have to, because at least we don't know of any serious disease you have at this moment.
As of yet.
But you can change over slowly, start drinking a lot more water, ease up a little bit on the coffee slowly, get rid of it slowly.
My coffee?
You don't have to get rid of it all at once.
No.
And then start having some vegetables, more vegetables that you like, and mm-hmm. then start having an occasional vegetable that you don't much care for, but you can learn to eat it. And it's amazing how you can actually start liking them. See, here's one reason you don't like vegetables. When you live on a diet of meat, I don't know, are you a big sugar eater too?
No.
Okay.
That's my one thing I do. No,
one
I don't.
Virtue, huh?
Yeah, I don't drink pop or anything like that. I don't eat candy. I'm not a sugar person.
Okay. Well, that's another thing that will kill people is sugar, because it paralyzes the immune system for 5 hours after you eat it. So then you can't resist any kind of disease. But
mm-hmm.
I forgot where I was.
Well, sugar.
No, but we were talking about something before sugar.
Well, we were with heart attacks.
Well, we were talking also about vegetables. And if you start...
Oh, no.
Oh, I was telling you why you don't like vegetables.
I couldn't remember, because I'm sure I blocked that out.
When you're eating meat, you see, not only do you have the stimulation of all the hormones that are given to the animals to make them grow bigger,
yes.
faster,
yeah.
and that is very stimulating to your body, but when the animal is killed, it knows it's going to die, and so it's terrified, and so it pours out huge amounts of stress hormones, which are very stimulating. And so when you eat that flesh food, you eat those stimulating hormones.
So are you saying then if we were to sneak up on a cow and hit it over the head with a pan when it wasn't looking, we'd be better off?
Probably. Probably.
Interesting.
However, so people become actually addicted to those stimulating hormones. That's why when people first stop eating meat, they feel like they've lost their energy at first, and it's just that they have to settle down from all those stimulating hormones. So if you start easing off on the meat a bit and start putting in some more vegetables and start drinking a lot of water, you will be amazed.
Well, my wife makes me drink water.
Well, that's good for her. That's probably why you're still standing.
Well, that may be. Vitamins and this giant glass of water. And she always does it just before I go on the air, so I feel like I'm sloshing into the room. But so I drink a lot of water. I guess I do a couple of good things. But, boy, to give up my coffee and give up my meat and cigarettes.
You may not have to give up your coffee. It may be forced out of your life by circumstances.
What, coffee, please?
I had to give up coffee even before I developed cancer, because I was having rather severe digestive problems that I figured were due to my coffee, and indeed they were.
Yeah, but how could you wake up in the morning, stumble out, and not have a cup of coffee there? I mean, what replaces a cup of coffee?
It was very difficult, I can tell you. It was one of the hardest things I ever had to give up, but I was starting to become symptomatic, and it was having a major impact on my life, and so I had to give it up. But this was before I had developed cancer, but this was one of the components that that gave me cancer. You see, caffeine also is toxic to the neurologic system, and it can contribute to many neurologic diseases as well, because it's a toxin.
You know, I look at what would have to be done, and I say to myself, I've got to be honest with you. I'm not sure I could do that. I'm honestly not. I mean, to shift my diet away from meat, give up my precious coffee, my cigarettes, start eating these coarse, foul vegetables. This is, of course, my perspective on things here. I eat vegetables only because I'm made to. my mother or my wife, I don't ever. There's never a time ever when I say, "God, I wish I had some string beans. Could you whip me up some string beans?" Never.
Well, I don't say never. That either. I don't say that either about string beans. But the thing is, I enjoy string beans when I eat them. Now, let me tell you, the last time I was on, I talked about my 85-year-old mother, who is now 87, and she developed a severe autoimmune disease. My mother was a sugarholic. She loved all of her delicious food and all of her sauces and, you know, cheese and all those things like that. And she developed this severe autoimmune disease called polymyalgia rheumatica. It's in the same category as lupus and rheumatoid arthritis.
Right.
The doctors wanted to put her on high-dose cortisone. I knew she'd have a stroke because cortisone has all sorts of side effects. So I said, absolutely not. The doctors got very upset with me. They tried to talk sense to me. I brought her out to my house, and I put her on this plan. And I want to tell you what happened. Now, she was 85 years old.
Right.
Within 3 weeks, we were able to get her off of all four high blood pressure medications that she had been on for as long as 35 years. In 3 weeks, her blood pressure was normal. Within 4 months, her cholesterol dropped from 280 to 120. Her triglycerides, which is a measure of the fat in your blood,
right.
Normal is 200 or below. Hers were 565. They dropped to 160 in 4 months. Within 6 months, she was totally well and had never been on any medications whatsoever. Now, when she first started out on the program, she would sit at the table, and her lower lip would hang out, and she would sit there and pout. And
yeah, that'd
say,
be me.
I don't like this.
That'd be me.
And I would say to her, Mom, just like she said to me when I was a little kid, I said, Mom, eat your vegetables. And I said, you're too sick to fix anything else. You either sit there and you eat it or you don't get anything. And she hated carrot juice at the beginning.
Oh, yeah.
And she would look at me and she'd say, you look like you like this stuff. And I said,
yeah, that's what I suspect too.
And I said, well, but I learned to like. I said, I do. So anyway, within a few months, she started to learn to like it because as she got the sugar out of her system and all the rich food out of her system, now she eats that way all the time. She is now 87 years old. She is still on no medication. Her blood pressure is normal. She walks a mile a day. She drinks her water, and she's just doing great.
All right. On behalf of all of the people doing all the wrong things like myself, I've got to ask the following question. We all know these people who have been health nuts, they eat fruits and nuts and vegetables, and that's all they ate, and they would preach about it. And then they have heart attacks or strokes in their early 50s or even earlier, and the nation goes, oh, my God, look at that person. They were leading the perfect life. They were eating just what they were supposed to eat, and they fell over dead. And then there is the lady who quit smoking at 118 years of age, and says she figures it's time to quit at 118. So what about that? In other words, it's not flawless. In other words, things can still happen to you that take you out early, right?
Well, first of all, let's just talk about what is the cause of disease. And it's not just diet. Remember I said that diet is critical
yes.
for recovery from a serious disease, a
right.
change of diet. But it is not the total thing. The plan, I have videos out where I have the whole plan that I use to get well, and it is a 10-part plan. The food, the nutrition, is only one part of the 10-part plan. The others are proper exercise, getting out in the fresh air, getting out in the sunlight, elimination of processed food and sugar and all of these chemicals that are in the food, and then learning to get the stress out of your life. Do you know, even though the statistics say the number one cause of death in America is heart disease and number two is cancer, the real number one cause of death in America is anger.
Anger?
Right.
Oof.
Anger. And people are angry about everything, and a lot of people have anger stuffed down inside. Now, I had some anger that I didn't even know I had. I had been through a very unpleasant divorce and a custody battle for my children, and I had a lot of anger about that I didn't really understand. And I had to learn to get rid of that. And that's where my trust in God came in, because I had to learn to give that to the Lord and get rid of that anger. And when I did, and I started trying to be benevolent to other people, being thankful for what I had, being thankful that I wasn't dead, and when I started looking at life that way, then the nutrition could start healing my body. Because people are so angry about so many things. They can eat right, but if they're all stressed out inside, they're going to have a heart attack.
Well, I hear that. Now, I have anger, but I externalize it. I don't internalize it. If I have anger, I let it out. But I have anger.
Well, I let my anger out, too. So that doesn't necessarily
help
take care of it. What we've got to do is actually, this is the hardest thing to do. You've got to learn to love your enemies. And that's a very difficult thing, and I can't tell you that I have arrived, but I've made some progress.
Yeah, I don't know if we ever arrive all the way at that destination.
But I can tell you, you know, when you start living life like this, see, when you're angry, your stomach contracts, so you can't digest your food. Your intestinal peristalsis stops, so you can't eliminate your waste.
Can't even sleep right, I know.
And your adrenal glands pour out all sorts of immune-suppressing hormones.
Oh, no, you're absolutely right. I know you're right. Hold on, doctor. We'll be right back. She is so right. Anger does all of that to you and more. I know she's right. But I also know that I'm doing all the wrong stuff, and I mean all the wrong stuff. The opposite of almost everything. The only place I got any points at all was sugar, and I don't think that's going to save me. We'll be right back. I'm Art Bell. Back now to Dr. Lorraine Day. Dr. Day, you were talking about stress, you know, above and beyond everything else. I'm a real serious type A person, no question about it. You can't do a five-hour talk show five nights a week and then 3 hours on Sunday and not be pretty type A. And there's a lot of stress in the work I do. I mean, there's a great deal of stress in the work I do. It may not seem that way sometimes on the air, and usually on the air there's not. But, you know, in the rest of the job, there's a very great deal of stress. There's just one thing about it, though. I love it. I thrive on it. Now, what do you say to that?
I loved my job, too. I thrived on it. I did it for 20 years, and I loved every minute of it, and I did not even at the time understand how stressful it was.
Of course not, but isn't it part of life? I mean, isn't getting out there and living life to its fullest part of life?
I'm not suggesting that people have to stop their jobs. I do suggest that people need to get 8 hours of sleep a night. Certainly seven, and get exercise and fresh air and things like that. And I'm not suggesting that you have a job that is stress-free. It is not so much the stress that you have, it is the way you handle it. And that's what I had to learn, how to handle stress without having it destroy me. And there is a way to do that. And that was the toughest job that I had to learn.
All right, what is that way? In other words, stress is stress. It's pressure. It means you're under some sort of deadline, or you have to perform in some way, in my case, or whatever it is. It's pressure. It's stress.
I tried a whole lot of different ways, as I talked about. I tried meditation. I tried various other forms of stress relief.
Right.
And the only way I could do it was to, and again, you're talking to a person who was an agnostic for 30 years, I had to turn to God and learn how to study my Bible and pray. And that's the way I learned to relieve my stress. And you might say, well, that sounds pretty simplistic. Not when you start really doing it. It didn't happen instantaneously that my stress was relieved. It took some real diligent effort in Bible study and prayer. And when I started doing that every single day, I would get up, and in fact, I still do. I spend an hour in prayer and Bible study with the Lord every single morning. That's the first thing I do when I get out of bed, and that has changed my life.
Well, you were agnostic, you said,
right,
as a physician, and I think a lot of physicians are agnostic,
right,
at the very least, aren't they?
Right.
How did you change that? In other words, how did the spiritual change come?
Well, actually, the spiritual change started before I developed cancer. When I was speaking all over the world about the AIDS epidemic, and I developed some very high-level contacts in the government in various undercover agencies, and they started sending me lots of information, much like what you get. And when I started seeing all this information and seeing the documents, it was pretty frightening. And so I went through a very difficult time, but when I was going through this, one day I was getting ready to do another radio show on all of this information, and I had already had my life threatened by the government by that time and things like that, and that's not really comfortable. And so I was sitting there going over my material, and suddenly a light bulb went off over my head, figuratively, and I said, I remember when I was a kid, because I was raised in a religious family, but I threw it all away. And I remember when I was a kid, things like I'm reading about in these documents I'm getting are in Revelation, in the book of Revelation in the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
So I went back to study it from an intellectual point of view to see if this had any relationship to what was happening right now. And in fact, I found out it did. And so I started studying just to try to figure out what was going on. And it was that way that I started to begin. And then I didn't develop a personal relationship with the Lord until I was truly, practically with my face in the dirt with this huge tumor on my chest, when I realized that medical knowledge could not save me. All of the schooling that I'd been to and through could not save my life. And I had to turn to the Lord and ask him to help show me how to get well.
Foxhole conversion.
Well, I was beginning my road before, but what I had to do, I had no place else to turn. Because I knew everything every other doctor did, and I knew that chemotherapy and radiation never really cure you. All they can do is try to... See, chemotherapy is poison.
Right.
You would never give it to a person who wasn't sick. Why would you give it to somebody who is sick?
Right, I guess the bet is that you try to kill the cancer before you kill the patient.
Yes, and usually you don't.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so I mean, this was not a good alternative. But I read there are a lot of promises, actually, in the Bible that say, if you obey my laws, my commands, and my decrees, I will keep you free from every disease. Not meaning I will give you a reward. It's just that health is a result of healthful living. And these rules and these guidelines are actually in the Bible. I went back to Genesis to find out how we were really meant to eat. And so when I started following these guidelines, I started getting well.
Well, I can't argue with that. Let's bring on some callers.
Right.
First-time caller line, you're on the air with Dr. Lorraine Day. Hello.
Yes, Art.
Yes, sir.
Yes, I'm calling from Youngstown.
Ohio, yes.
Yes, WKBN. Dr. Day, I was wondering what you were saying about, what you were talking about anger. By the way, I got up on your website, and I think that your story is an inspiration.
Oh, it is.
And what I wanted to know, on the question of anger, is there more than one type of anger? Because I know several people who seem to be angry a lot, but is there such a thing as righteous anger? Is there such a thing as positive anger? Can it be used positively?
Yeah, that's a good question, actually.
There is a reason to when you see someone being wronged, it is right, that's righteous indignation, but it's different than letting it take control of you. There is something constructive about if you come to the aid of someone who is being beaten to death,
mm-hmm.
That's a different kind of thing than when you are venting your rage on someone who has wronged you.
Mm-hmm.
So it is totally different, yes. There are two different kinds.
Boy, I wouldn't begin to know how to do that. I'm the kind of person that, and I'm sure that caller is too, that if somebody comes after me, I'm a libertarian, and I'm sort of live and let live in my attitude about the world and people that I know. But when somebody comes after me, I tend to go after them even harder. In other words, I don't roll over. And I guess you're telling me that you've got to virtually learn to roll over. If somebody wrongs you in some way, you've got to intellectualize it to the point where it doesn't matter to you. You're going to not allow them to get to you or something or another. I'm not sure what you're saying.
Well, here's what you're saying. I'm not going to let someone else control my behavior.
That's right.
I'm going to control it myself rather than let someone else control it. But again, most of us are weak enough that we can't do that, and that's where I had to turn to God for the strength to do it. Now, you're talking to someone who also was like you. I had, as I say, I had 90 patients frequently in the hospital, all very, very sick, with terrible injuries. I had 12 residents and interns that were on my under me that I was training. I had
right.
to run a very tight ship. In fact,
right.
my residents called me Lorraine of Terror.
Lorraine of Terror.
So, I mean, I was like that. And so I had a lot of lessons to learn, and it was not easy. But I can tell you, it was that or die.
But, you know, suppose you took Lorraine of today and tried to put her back in the job that she had back then. You really couldn't do that job now, could you?
Well, I mean, as far as staying up all night, I wouldn't do that.
No, I don't mean that. I mean, to be in the tense situation of an emergency room or trauma medicine, without that edge.
Yes, I could do it better than I ever did it before.
You really think so?
Absolutely. I know I could. Absolutely.
And you could run a tight ship?
Yes.
Are you tempted to return?
No, because what I'm doing now is so much more fulfilling. Again, I'm showing people how they can get well from diseases that we in medicine have told them they can't get well from.
All right. Wild Card Line, you're on the air with Dr. Lorraine Day and Art Bell. Hi.
Yes, how you doing? I'm calling you from KFYI in Phoenix.
Yes, sir.
Dr. Day, what kind of juicer do you use? And are you familiar with the works of Norman Walker and Bernard Jensen?
Oh, yes. Very much so. Those were great men in the field. Right. I happen to have a Norwalk juicer, which is sort of a Cadillac of juicers.
Oh,
but
yeah,
you can
about 1,500. I know.
Yeah,
oh,
you
yeah.
can get well on virtually any kind of juicer.
Mm-hmm.
I know people who've gotten well on Juice Man Junior juicers and Champions and on all different kinds of juicers.
On that juicer, right? On your Norwalk juicer?
Yes.
I heard that is so thorough that the pulp that's left from it is like no better than sawdust. Is that true?
Well, no, it's good for compost.
It's good for compost?
Right.
I think I've read in the literature that, you know, it takes out a lot of nutrient value, but you can basically do that with any juicer?
Well, no, the other juicers aren't as good at taking out all the nutrition, but what I'm saying is you can get well from cancer on virtually any juicer. But again, it's not just the juicing, it's the total 10-step plan. By the way, I should tell people, on my website, I have a chat session every Thursday evening from 7 to 8 p.m. Pacific time where I will answer questions. People can come and talk to me directly, and my website is www.drday.com. That's drday.com.
All right, and we have a link up to you right now.
Yes.
As well. Let me tell you a little juicer story. I went on a cruise, and when you go on a cruise, they have these exercise rooms on the ship, you know, these vast exercise rooms. They have a juice bar. And for the first time in my life, my wife talked me into trying this tall glass of a million things juiced together. And I don't know how to put this delicately, but my number one and number two respectively turned red and purple, and it scared the hell out of me. Is that...
It had beet juice in it, that's why. It had beets in it.
God, I thought this was the end of the line. Nothing ever scared me so badly in my whole life.
Well, the thing is, when you start on juice, you don't want to mix a whole lot of things together. I can guarantee you, if I gave you a glass of fresh carrot and apple juice. You would like it.
Okay, well, maybe. Try and explain to me how Dr. Lorraine of Terror could do her job, that same job in which you were declared to be a terror, with the same efficiency, without the stress. In other words, when you're instructing interns, when you see one of them screw up and do something really stupid, how do you respond without internalizing stress, or externalizing it at least? I just don't understand. You're in a boom, 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 boom kind of job, and you've got to get it done, and you've got to train people, and you've got to be sure people don't die. How do you do that without the stress, Doctor?
Well, again, it's a little difficult to tell in a 1-2-3 because I had to spend a lot of time learning that if I gave my life to God and He would help direct me, then I could rest assured that these things would get done, and in fact, I've become much more efficient because of it. I can tell that in my life. I am much more efficient than I was before, and
sure.
I was pretty efficient.
Sure, but you're not under the same kind of pressure that you were.
No, but I can tell you this. I was under, even when I spend a lot of time on the radio, I've done 400, 600, 800 radio shows on AIDS and all that before I ever got started
sure.
talking about cancer, and I was in a lot of confrontational situations.
Yep.
And the way I handle that now is totally different, but I still get my point across, but I don't get angry.
Okay.
Because it's just a change that takes place in your life, which is gradual. It is not instantaneous, where you learn. Actually, you learn to see life better from the other person's point of view.
Well, I have learned to control anger in the sense that I fully understand that when you really just lose it and you get very, very, very angry, you become incredibly inefficient. You don't see the tree for the forest or the forest for the tree or whatever. You don't see anything. It's like the red blanket goes up in front of you and you begin lashing out foolishly and inefficiently. I've learned to channel my anger specifically, so it's effectively applied, not just sort of randomly lashing out, which a lot of people do when they get angry. They totally lose it. So I've channeled anger, but that's still not the same thing as what you have done.
Well, that's right. And again, it was not easy for me to do, and I was dying. And it was only when I learned how to do that that everything turned around. But when I had trust in those promises, if you obey my laws and my decrees and my commands, I will keep you free from every disease. And that's why there are all these things in the Bible that says, love your enemies, do good to them that hate you. It turns out that makes a physiologic difference in your body, and your cells then can learn to heal.
That's remarkable. That really is remarkable, and I have a feeling, of course, that you're absolutely right. All right, we're at the top of the hour, and I can allow you to go or stay for another hour. Your choice.
Well, I'd like to stay, and I would also, if anybody has to go, I'd just like to let them know, those who aren't on the Internet, the tumor pictures are on my most recent videos. I have two new videos.
Well, listen, everybody will still be here. Don't worry. Everybody's still
okay.
Here. And we'll get the information out when we get back. I'm Art Bell, and this is Coast to Coast AM. Lorraine Day, Dr. Day, you have some tapes that you have put together, I guess. Is that correct?
Yes. Since I was on the last time, I had the two cancer tapes, Cancer Doesn't Scare Me Anymore, and You Can't Improve on God, which is the exact plan I used to get well. Then I have another one called Diseases Don't Just Happen, where I go into virtually all different kinds of diseases and show from the medical literature why these diseases happen and how you can get well without drugs. And then as far as particularly anger, I have a video called Turn on the Light, Overcoming Anxiety and Depression, and that also includes anger and other kinds of psychological problems without drugs. And those are available by calling 1-800-574-2437. That's 1-800-574-2437. And let me just give out an address.
All right, is that a 24-hour number?
Yes, it's a 24-hour number, but the last time I was on your show, the whole company that provided our phone answering service imploded, and so let me give out an address.
All right.
It's Rockford Press. That's Rockford Press. P.O. Box 8. And the city is Thousand Palms. Thousand is spelled out, Palms, California, 92276. We have a totally different answering service now, so it shouldn't implode. But if you have trouble getting through, at least you have an address.
All right. Give me the address again. Rockford Press, P.O. Box 8.
Where? Thousand Palms.
Thousand Palms.
That's the city. It's P.O. Box 8, and the city is Thousand Palms, California, 92276.
Palms, California. Okay. Just one other quick question, and I wonder if you've done any research in this area, Doctor. We've been getting a lot of information lately from people who claim that our own government is experimenting on us. Now, this is kind of going far afield from where we've been, and I won't take you there very long, but there is some admitted evidence that our government has done this, that areas have been sprayed, that toxins, that experiments have been run to see how quickly a biowarfare agent might be able to be spread, that sort of thing, that civilian populations have been experimented on. Do you know anything about any of that?
Yes, I do, and it's true. I know quite a bit about it firsthand. When I was an intern, we had a lot of patients dying in the hospital from an organism that was very, very rare. And as an intern, I just thought that this was happening maybe everywhere. But it turns out it was only happening in San Francisco, and it wasn't until 10 to 15 years later it actually came out in a newspaper article. The government admitted that they had dumped this organism in the San Francisco Bay just to see what would happen and to see how many people would get it. Now, we also have evidence in the medical literature of the Tuskegee syphilis study.
Oh, of course.
That's very clear. And there are many books written documenting over and over again all of the experimenting that our government has done on citizens. We also have other articles in the medical literature about radiation studies done on people without their consent and without their knowledge. This is going on, has in the past, and continues to go on now.
Just thought I'd ask. All right. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Dr. Lorraine Day. Where are you, please?
Fonz in New York City.
New York City, all right.
I hope you don't mind my saying this, but that doctor's name is Teplitsky, I'm pretty sure, the one that you did the ad for. But the question that I wanted to ask Dr. Day is, I had read some books, and there's been a lot of information on the glycemic index, and a lot of doctors have said that the juices are very high on the glycemic index compared to the whole fruit, and that especially carrots are even higher than fruit. I was wondering if you might comment on that.
In other words, boiled down to English, you're saying it's better to eat them than it is to juice them.
Well, right, that they raise the blood sugar, even carrots supposedly raise the blood sugar more even than fruit.
Okay. Doctor?
Well, certainly when you have, first of all, when you have fiber associated with sugar, it is metabolized more slowly in the body, and so then that raises the insulin more slowly. However, when you have natural sugar, it's totally different from refined sugar. And so if a person is a diabetic and they have cancer, I tell them to start off with one carrot juice a day, dilute it 50-50, and then start changing their diet and eating all the right things and changing the way they're living. And as they get better, they will be able to increase very quite rapidly, actually, their carrot juice over the next few weeks, always checking their blood sugar and urine sugar. But if a person is not a diabetic, not only can they handle it well, see, the body runs on sugar. When I say sugar, I'm not talking about refined sugar. It runs on carbohydrate. The fuel for the brain is carbohydrate. It is glucose. That's what the brain runs on. And the rest of the body thrives on a high complex carbohydrate diet. That means whole fruits and vegetables. When you juice it, what you're trying to do is get lots of nutrition in rapidly so the body does not have to digest it. You see, no nobody could eat 35 pounds of carrots a week.
And live.
But that's right, especially you, huh?
Yeah, that's right.
But you need to get that nutrition in because cancer and virtually all disease is a problem of malnutrition. We're eating a lot of calories, but the wrong kind. And so you have to get nutrition into your body to make it well. And this is the way to do it. Now, I've heard all sorts of doctors say that, but in practice, they're wrong. I have a letter in front of me. I get lots of mail. I have a letter in front of me from a woman who's about 80 years old, and she wrote, and she said she was a diabetic, and she had all sorts of other problems, and the doctor said, you're not supposed to drink carrot juice. It's too high in sugar, and she said she told him to go fly a kite, and she went home, and she did it. Within 3 weeks, she had lowered her insulin level by eating right and going on the carrot juice. Again, gradually, she had lowered her insulin dose by 50% and continued to stay on the plan and is almost all the way off her insulin. So this is the kind of thing that happens. And so they're not separating natural sugar from refined sugar. Refined sugar, a light sugar that's in a sugar bowl, which they put in ketchup and even they're putting it in toothpaste and things like that, and almost all processed food, that hits your body like a jolt of cocaine.
Mm.
Totally different from natural sugar.
I do want to give out your information. To get her tapes, the ones you heard her talk about, there is a 24-hour number available. Hopefully, it's not swamped beyond all redemption. The number is 1-800-574-2437. That's 1-800-574-2437. And or you can write to Rockford Press, Rockford Press, P.O. Box 8, Thousand Palms, California, zip code 92276. That's Rockford Press, P.O. Box 8, Thousand Palms, California, zip code 92276. And here we go again. First time caller line, you're on the air with Dr. Lorraine Day. Hi.
Good morning, Rick.
Good morning. I can barely hear you, so you're going to have to yell at us a little.
Good morning, Art. Good morning, Dr. Dan.
Good morning.
From Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I would like to know if the doctor has any special advice for somebody with hepatic conjunctivitis, because pharmaceutical medication hasn't helped it at all.
You have herpes of the eye. Again, herpes is a virus which is the result of an immune system that is not functioning properly. What you need to do is start rebuilding your immune system, and you do that by a change in your diet and lifestyle, because there is no, see, antibiotics do not work on viruses. Antiviral medication all have side effects, and they do not destroy the herpes virus. So all you're doing is trying to knock it down a little bit. What you have to do is rebuild your body so your body can fight the infection.
Mm-hmm. All right, so all the advice that you've heard earlier tonight,
that's right,
applies.
Applicable to this and all.
That's correct. That's correct.
Because the pharmaceutics haven't helped it in any way, shape, or form.
Well, in that case, you don't have much to lose by changing your life in the manner she described.
Certainly not, and I thank you very much. Have
all right.
a good evening.
You bet. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Dr. Lorraine Day. Hello.
Hello, doctor. I don't know if you've had, this may be a silly question, but instead of juicing, if I drank a lot of orange juices and apple juices, would that have the same effect? And then I have another question about olive oil and garlic.
All right.
Okay, first of all, orange juice, you don't want to drink more than one glass of orange juice a day.
Oops.
Because that does not have the same antioxidant effect that the carrot juice has.
Okay.
Apple juice, yes, apple is very good, and I mix the apple in with the carrot and the apple in with the green leafy vegetable juice, which you'll see on the plan, and that is very beneficial. But you need, carrots are one of the best antioxidants, and you need all of the vitamins that are in the green leafy vegetable juice. Now, when you talk about olive oil and vinegar.
No, I mean olive oil and garlic. Are the claims
so olive
that,
oil and garlic
yeah.
for what? You mean like a dress salad dressing?
Well, no, but I've heard that, you know, putting that in your diet, you know, I've heard these wonderful, almost like this is like a miracle thing with olive oil and garlic. I was just wanting to get your opinion.
Well, the thing is, see, there are no quick fixes. Oh, I understand. There are no quick fixes, and garlic has a lot of antibiotic effects, but right. You have to be careful because garlic is very pungent, it's very strong, and it can have a very irritating effect.
Mm-hmm.
The best oil, if you have a serious disease,
right.
You don't want to take a lot of fat, even vegetable fat, into your body because cancer thrives on fat. Now, if you do not have cancer,
right.
Certainly olive oil is the very best oil to cook with.
Okay.
The very best.
Okay.
All right. Another thing about oils, for those of you listening, if you just think about a steak that's out on your kitchen counter, if you look at the fat on that steak, it is solid at room temperature. It's also solid at body temperature,
mm-hmm.
In the cow's body and in your body when you eat it. When you cook your steak, some of that fat will melt, but as soon as it cools down a little bit, it will solidify in the pan. So when you eat fresh food, the fat that's marbled in the meat is solid at body temperature in your body. When you eat vegetable fats, they are liquid, like olive oil and flaxseed oil. They are liquid at room temperature and liquid at body temperature, so they don't clog up your arteries like animal fats do.
Okay.
East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Dr. Lorraine Day. Hi.
Good evening.
Good evening.
I have been taking garlic, odorless garlic pills, and cayenne pills for a long time, and it is some of the healthiest things that have ever happened to me. So I want to know, why are people talking against these kind of medications?
Who's talking against them?
Well, it's so good for the human body to take odorless garlic. And,
yeah, repeat, sir. Who talked against them?
Well, I've heard things about these medications as to their opposite effect on the human body.
You mean other than tonight?
And tonight. And I'm wondering, why do people...
I haven't heard that.
Why do people talk against the kind of things that are the best for the human body?
Again, sir, I haven't heard that. Not on this program, anyway.
Well, what are the benefits, then, that Dr. Day is talking about, that cayenne, for instance, will help the human body?
Well, first of all, we haven't even discussed cayenne tonight.
Yeah. Where are you coming from here?
It's a marvelous product to use, and it has certainly helped my heart and all the functions of my body. It helps the body perform at its maximum, and I wonder why these things aren't mentioned.
First of all, there is no heart problem or cardiovascular problem that is due to a deficiency of cayenne. There are, and I'm not against cayenne. What I'm telling you is, in order to really get well, what we've got to do is we've got to reverse the things that happened in our body. When our arteries are clogged up, which is what causes heart disease, heart attacks, and strokes, we've got to unclog them. And the best way to unclog them is to change the things in our diet and our lifestyle that are clogging them up. Cayenne can certainly have some good effects on these things, but it doesn't cure the problem because if you don't change your diet and lifestyle to get rid of the fat in your body, you're still going to have arteriosclerosis. Garlic, as I just talked about, has a lot of antibiotic effects. It has a lot of immune-boosting effects, but you have to be somewhat careful.
You have to take it raw. If you cook with it, it loses the nutritional effect for your body.
But you have to be somewhat careful because it has an irritating effect on the body. It does have a lot of positive effects, but again, there are no diseases caused by a deficiency of garlic. There are diseases caused by a deficiency of nutrition, vitamins, minerals, and enzymes, and too much fat and protein in the diet. So that's where we've got to really put the emphasis rather than just picking a herb out here or something out there and thinking that we're living healthy.
Let me try this one out on you. This does seem to be true that some people who live lives that you would consider far less than ideal do not come up with arterial sclerosis, or they don't have a heart attack or stroke or get cancer. They seem to live and then live to a ripe old age and then die of whatever. It doesn't happen to them. Where, on the other hand, some other people, doctor, are particularly prone to clogged arteries and their counts, I forget what it is you look at, always are high, while other people seem to be able to get away with food murder, and their count remains low and normal, and they just go sailing through life.
Okay, well, first of all, let's just look at the trends. In 1900, the percentage of all deaths from percentage of the total deaths of people who died in the United States, heart disease was only 8%.
Oh, I'm not even going to begin to make this argument. I wouldn't even try because I know you're correct. All I'm saying is, why are there these seeming exceptions to the rule?
Okay, first of all, the people who now live to a ripe old age, and you'll find people who, you know, a few, now most of these people die. The ones that you see living to a ripe old age are the exception and not the rule, and you might say, why are they the exception?
I'm asking that.
Right. First of all, when they were being raised, remember, in the early 1900s, if somebody, say, 100 years old now, they were eating out of their gardens. They ate much less flesh food then. They didn't eat sugar. They didn't drink sodas. They weren't under the stresses that we are under now as far as the civilization is concerned. And a lot of those people have maintained some of those healthy lifestyles. And even if they've smoked on top of that, if they're still, say, eating out of their gardens or they're eating very healthily, they can survive. If you have a person who is, you know, 50 years old and they have been eating all wrong and they have been had a good attitude, not getting angry, frequently they can overcome wrong eating habits by their attitude. I know a woman who is 75 years old. She is grossly overweight, but she has the world's greatest attitude. Most people who are grossly overweight don't live to be 75, but she does not get angry. She has peace in her heart, and she is doing very, very well. I also know of another person, actually a distant relative of mine, who is a very angry lady, but she eats right and she exercises every day. She should have been dead a long time ago, but she's still going.
So there's really no single answer, is there?
It is a multifactorial situation. In other words, you've got to really look at the whole plan, and sometimes you can overcome one with another. But if you have lots of stresses, you don't handle the anger in the way you should, and you eat wrong, you're a disaster waiting to happen.
Gotcha. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Dr. Lorraine Day. Hi.
Hello, Art.
Yes, sir.
This is Johnny down in Phoenix looking for you on KFYI.
Yes, sir.
Dr. Day, I'm not a learned colleague, but I've been around for quite a while. And I want to just give you something positive here. I know of at least a dozen people who have been cured of cancer and other degenerative diseases by doing exactly what you say.
Well, thank you very much. That's great to hear.
I have twice that many friends who went the traditional route, and they're all dead now.
Right.
What I wanted to ask you about, have you heard of a fellow by the name of Reverend George Malcomus?
Oh, yes. He's a friend of mine.
Yeah, is he?
Well, oh, yes, and I'm going to be speaking at his place in April.
Oh, okay. That's what I was going to ask you about. He, it's so hard to get greens, you know, to juice.
Right.
And he recommends a product called barley green.
Yes.
And what is your opinion on that?
I think it is very good, but fresh green leafy vegetable juice is better. Barley green is good.
Yeah, okay.
All right.
How about a Dr. Joel Wallach? Have you heard of him?
That's different. Yeah.
That's different.
Right.
Well, he pretty much says what you say, except he leans more towards the minerals, you know.
Yeah.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Dr. Day. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Okay.
This is Patrick from San Diego. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes, sir.
I actually got about four questions, but I can do them quickly. Dr. Day, you mentioned that, you know, chemotherapy is poison, and not that this would be an issue for myself personally, but the same thing is said often about AZT for AIDS, and I was wondering, that's my first question, what your opinion on that would be.
AZT. Yeah.
AZT is also poison. In fact, AZT was so poisonous they wouldn't even use it for cancer patients. It was on the shelf, and they decided to give it to AIDS patients.
Second question would be, and I have a couple after, what are your thoughts on, and the only one that springs to mind is, Dr. Peter Duesberg out of UC Berkeley and others who claim that HIV does not cause AIDS or it's not proven.
Yeah, Good question. I've interviewed Dr. Duesberg. He presents a compelling case, Doctor.
Yes. I know Dr. Duesberg, and I've read his work. I have a document, House Bill 15090, Subcommittee for Defense Appropriations for 1970, where they actually asked for a virus to be made, a microorganism, mm-hmm. and this is the exact quote, that does not now exist, for which would destroy human beings' immune system and for which there would be no cure.
Mm-hmm.
We have evidence that that was funded, and that was funded in the early 70s. And I have a former, I have a friend who is a former British MI6 agent who was in the MI6 in Britain at the time that all of this was going on, who confirms this. And so I do agree with Dr. Duesberg that you can't get any disease until your immune system is suppressed. Dr. Duesberg has said publicly, which I do not agree with, he said that there would be no AIDS in Africa if they just had McDonald's there, I guess as though McDonald's would be nutritious food. But certainly a bad diet does suppress the immune system. But it's not all that simple as Dr. Duesberg suggests. Certainly when you have a suppressed immune system, you are more prone to getting any kind of disease. But there is a lot of evidence and documentation that indeed this was a man-made virus.
This was not actually one of the questions, but that prompts your response and also the fact that Art says that he's had Dr. Duesberg on. Are either of you familiar with the book, and Art, have you had this guest on your show, by Leonard Horowitz,
yes.
Emerging Viruses?
Yes.
Oh, yes. Ebola? Yes. Yes, I've had him on.
Yeah, okay. I do have a couple after this, but what are your thoughts on his work or his book?
Well, he has not given the facts of the Kimberly Bergalis case correctly, and I'm not quite sure why he didn't do that, because I was an expert witness for Kimberly Bergalis, the woman who got AIDS from her dentist, and he has taken those facts and turned them upside down, and I just don't know what his motivation is for doing that.
One of the publications put out by the U.S. Army War College on non-lethal weaponry, The Revolution in Military Affairs and Conflict Short of War, they say most Americans would not support the use of a weapon designed to target only specific racial or ethnic groups in anything less than a war for the survival of the nation. Next line, this is the last one, could the government and military of this multi-ethnic republic face charges that it was developing or using weapon targeting Africans, Jews, Koreans, Hispanics, etc.? That was by Stephen Metz and James Kivett. And why would they even raise that question?
All right. Well, it's obvious because obviously they have considered such a thing. Not publicly, I'm sure, but privately you can bet on it. Doctor?
Right. Oh, that's right. Yes, they have. In fact, it's been actually public in the newspaper that certain countries are actually preparing an ethnic bomb, if you will.
Well, it has been a real pleasure, as always. Kind of scary, but a pleasure having you on, and I sense you're absolutely correct, as always. And I would invite people to, if they want to know more, check your website, if they have a computer. If not, call 1-800-574-2437, or, if you wish, write to Rockford Press, P.O. Box 8, the number 8, Thousand Palms, California, zip code 92276. And, Doctor, I'm sure we will do it again.
Well, thank you so much. And tell Richard Hoagland that if I can do anything to help him, please let me know.
You've got it.
Okay.
Doctor, thank you.
Thank you.
Take care. All right. There you have it. That's Dr. Lorraine Day. Agree, disagree, I don't know. Deep in your heart, you know she's right, even if you can't make the changes. And I'm probably in that category. You've got to know she's right.